Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. This is podcast number 6 of Living a Naturally Healthy Life with Delaine MD. In this podcast, we are going to talk about sugar. So many of you know that I have been reading a book called Salt, Sugar, and Fat by Michael Moss. It is subtitled How the Food Giants Hooked Us. This book has been absolutely fascinating, really shedding a ton of light on why we struggle so much with such bad food choices. So that led me to look a little bit more into why we struggle so much with sugars. That's what this podcast is about. I will let you guys know, I have 3 dogs and 1 cat in my office right now. As I'm recording this, I hope that they will continue to sleep like dogs and cats do and should. But you may hear an animal roaming around, and hopefully that's as exciting as it gets. So we'll see. So I don't know if you guys remember the movie called So I Married an Axe Murderer from the 1990s. It was a Mike Myers movie. It has a quote that I love and that I use pretty frequently. But in this movie, I think this is Mike Myers' best work. A lot of his Austin Powers stuff and characters, I think, maybe were honed in this movie. I never have really watched the Austin Powers movies, so I don't know. But whenever I make people watch this movie, they're always like, oh, is this guy like Austin Powers? Is this the same as Austin Powers? If you do watch it, and if you haven't watched it, you totally should. But if you do watch it, you will recognize that there's a lot of similarities between the two movies. In this movie, though, So I Married an Axe Murderer, there is a scene where Mike Myers' character, who's named Charlie McKenzie, is watching TV with his father and his best friend. So the father character is also played by Mike Myers. While they're watching TV, there's a discussion, and it comes to light that the father does not like the Colonel. Of course, the Colonel is Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken fame, right? So Charlie questions how it's possible that his father doesn't like the Colonel. And the father's reply is perfect in every way. Because he puts an addictive chemical in his chicken that makes you crave it fortnightly, smart ass. It's very funny. Please take 2 hours and watch the movie because it's way better than my rendition of it. But it's a wonderful movie and it's a perfect quote. My suspicion is the addictive chemical that Stuart McKenzie is talking about in the movie is nothing more than sugar. Do you ever wonder why you struggle so hard to let go of certain foods? Maybe it's Oreos or ice cream or Jolly Ranchers or Mike and Ike's. Maybe it's donuts or Snickers bars. Maybe it's Planters peanuts. Maybe it's barbecue chips. Maybe it's barbecue sauce. Maybe it's ketchup. Don't get me started on Powerades or Gatorades or Red Bulls or Nossas or Nitros or sodas or diet sodas or the caramel latte bada chapa bappa frappas from Starbucks. Don't get me started on any of those. Maybe it's my old vice, the M&M, that loaded itty-bitty little power pellet that I could eat a pound of without biting an eye at. The one thing that all of these items have in common is sugar, and lots of it. How do we feel when we eat sugar? As discussed in my previous podcast, there's a primitive part of our brain that's heavily influenced by rewards. This part of our brain looks to seek out pleasure, avoid pain, and expend the least amount of energy possible. It looks to repeat activities that generate this reward stimuli. This reward stimulus is carried in the form of a neurotransmitter such as dopamine. These are chemicals that are released into our brain, and they reward us and they make us feel fabulous. So why do we crave it all the time? As part of our primitive brain's wiring, we are rewarded when we eat. This occurs when we eat anything. Meats, fruits, fats, vegetables, everything. Remember, this was an incentive to get our ancestors out of the safety of the cave and go and hunt and gather food, which in pre-modern times could be dangerous. The carbohydrate component of our food would cause a release of these feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine, leading our brains to feel rewarded for taking the risk of hunting and gathering. Of course, in modern times, food procurement is a safe activity. You run to your nearest grocery store, you pick up whatever foods you want or need. But instead of having naturally occurring foods, of course, we have processed our foods. We've started processing the foods and concentrating the nutrients. Specifically, we concentrate the carbohydrate component of most of our food sources. This causes our brain to release a concentrated amount of these feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine. This gives our brain a much larger, a huge reward response. In turn, we crave the reward response over and over. And of course, this experience of reward is available to us anytime and all the time. It's just down the street at our neighborhood grocery store, over and over and over again. So why is it so hard to let go of these foods? It's very challenging, even when you know it's making you sick. Your doctor has told you you must stop eating this candy, these sweets, these breads, the chips, the pizza, the crappa chappa bappas from Starbucks, pancakes, and certainly, for the love of all that's holy, stop eating Mrs. Butterworth syrup. You've heard them. You understand the English. You understand that continuing down this path will lead to poor health at best and death at worst. So why can't you stop? Does it seem like you want to stop because you know it's bad, but you just can't? Does it seem like you make a plan to stop, but then you can't seem to execute the plan? Does it seem like you're successful in work and parenting and so many other areas of your life, but why is it possible that you can't be successful over chocolate cake? Here's why. It's your biochemistry. The physiology of how sweet foods affect our brain is very similar to the physiology of how opiates affect our brain. What's an opiate, you might ask? It's hydrocodone, which is Norco, Vicodin, Lortabs. It's hydromorphone, which is Dilaudid. It's oxycodone, that's Percocet. It's fentanyl, it's heroin, it's codeine. It's addictive drugs. And the same way the physiology in our brain reacts to those drugs is the same way the physiology in our brain reacts when we eat sweet foods and sugars. Several investigations have suggested this relationship between sweet tastes and analgesia, or pain relief, mediated through these opiate receptor systems. Several studies show evidence that the opiate receptor is turned on when we eat foods, when we ingest food. We know that sweet food ingestion has been associated with clinically significant pain reduction in humans. And to make all of this worse and more challenging, the food industry has made a science out of creating foods to have the perfect amount of sweetness to light up these reward systems in our brain. A food research center called Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia spends $17.5 million annually researching how food affects our bodies. Half of that yearly budget comes from federal grants, and the other half of that budget comes from the food industry. This is just one of many food research organizations. The food industry spends millions of dollars financing studies through such organizations in order to find ways to ensure that consumers will purchase as much of their food as possible. The food industry has found through research that sugar not only makes food irresistible, literally irresistible to the point that we eat it even when it makes us sick, but it's also added to food to increase everything from shelf life to fluffiness to make our baked goods better, to make bread that won't go stale, and make cereals that are toasty brown and fluffy. In 2013, our sugar consumption, sugar being sucrose, high fructose corn syrup, fruit juice concentrate, just to name a few, calculated out to be 22 teaspoons of sugar per person per day in America. Sugar is everywhere in processed foods. So number one, our brains reward us for eating these foods. Number two, our brains crave it all the time. Similar to the Mike Myers quote, and three, the food industry is exploiting our biology in order to get us to buy more and more of these foods and make them millionaires, even when these foods make us sick. So this is the problem. This is the perfect storm that leads us to have diabetes, to developing diabetes. Physiologically, when we eat processed foods, all of which is turned into sugars in our bodies, remember, all starches, whether it's potatoes or crackers or cereal or bread or Oreos break down into glucose, their primary component, their molecular component, before they're absorbed across our GI tract into our bloodstream. This high blood sugar concentration then leads us to release a high amount of insulin, a high concentration of insulin to counteract that blood sugar. That's the first component of diabetes, high concentrations of insulin in our system. And then in America, we eat all day long, right? We consume these highly processed foods from the moment we get up in the morning to the moment we go to bed. So we get prolonged exposure to these high levels of insulin. That's the second part of diabetes. The first part of diabetes is the high amount of insulin, the high concentration of insulin you're exposed to. The second part is the prolonged exposure. That's what leads to insulin resistance, which is what type 2 diabetes is. This is why we're sick. So as a life coach, I help my clients see the error messages that the brains are sending to them. The message of you have to eat, or you want that food, or worse yet, you need that food. Through awareness, I help my clients see that they don't need the food. They have plenty of stored energy on the body. It's okay to pass on foods that are making them ill. I teach them to allow these thoughts to come and go, to allow the urges to come and go. And in learning to allow these urges to pass and not comply with the demands of their primitive brain, they learn to rise above it and gain control over their food desires. This allows them to start eating in a way that serves their body, normalizes their insulin resistance, gets them off their insulin and their diabetes meds, and start living a naturally healthy life. Does this sound like something you're interested in? If so, send an email to delaine@delainemd.com. Let's set up some time for a mini coaching session. I hope you have a great week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.